Following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on February 12, 1986 at New Talavan Farm in Carriera, Mississippi. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 9, Text 54.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Narayanam Namaskritya Narang Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudiyajet. Mukakaroti vachalam pangulam gayate giring at kipatamahang bande sri gurung dinatajinam paramananda maravam chukaitaneshwaram prinanti hatamang dhira sarva bhavina sadhava sayaskama mahabhaga sarvasam ashishang patim prinanti, try to please.
He.
Indeed.
Atha.
Because of this.
Mam.
Me.
Dira.
Those who are sober and most intelligent.
Those who are sober and most intelligent.
Sarvabhavena.
In all respects.
In different modes of devotional service.
Different modes of devotional service.
Sadhava. Persons who are very well behaved.
Persons who are very well behaved.
Perfect in all respects.
Perfect in all respects.
Shreyas.
Kama.
Desiring the best benefit in life.
Desiring the best benefit in life.
Mahabhaga.
Mahabhaga.
O you who are so fortunate.
O you who are so fortunate.
Sarvasam.
Sarvasam.
Of all.
Ashisham.
Kinds of benedictions.
Kinds of benediction.
Patim.
Patim.
The master.
The master.
Me.
Translation
by Srila Prabhupada. My dear Prahlada, you are very fortunate. Please know from me that those who are very wise and highly elevated try to please me in all different modes of mellows. For I am the only person who can fulfill all the desires of everyone. Translation with repetition. My dear Prahlada.
My dear Prahlada.
You are very fortunate.
You are very fortunate.
Please know from me.
Please know from me.
That those who are very wise.
That those who are very wise.
And highly elevated.
And highly elevated.
Try to please me.
Try to please me.
In all different modes of mellows.
In all different modes of mellows.
For I am the only person.
For I am the only person.
Who can fulfill.
All the desires of everyone. All the desires of everyone.
Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The words dhira sarva bhavena do not mean in whichever way you like. Bhava is the preliminary condition of love of Godhead. Ata shakti stato bhavas tata prema byudanchati sadhaka namayang premna Pradur Bhave Bhavet Krama. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.4.16. The bhava stage is the final division before one reaches love of Godhead. The word sarva bhava means that one can love the Supreme Personality of Godhead in different transcendental modes of mellows, beginning with dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and madhurya. In the santa stage, one is on the border of loving service to the Lord. Pure love of Godhead begins from dasya and develops to sakya, vatsalya, and then madhurya. Still, in any of these five mellows, one can render loving service to the Supreme Lord. Since our main business is to love the Supreme Personality of Godhead, One can render service from any of the above-mentioned platforms of love. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada purport to the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 54, chapter 9, canto 7. In the matter of Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. So, Lord Nrsingadev was very angry, and everyone was afraid to go to Nrsingadev to appease him, except for Prahlad. But when Prahlad came forward, Nrsingadev touched his head with his lotus hands, with his conch or his hand, I think with his hand, and soon as he was touched by Nrsingadev, touched by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then he became totally purified. And by the blessing of the Lord, he was able to speak very eloquently. After speaking, then Lord Nrsingadev was very pacified by his devotee, Prahlad Maharaj. All of the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj were offered on the transcendental platform. So then he gave his blessings to Prahlad Maharaj. He said, "My dear Prahlad, most gentle one, best of the family of the Asuras, all good fortune unto you. I am very much pleased with you. It is my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings, and therefore you may ask for me any benediction that you desire to be fulfilled. My dear Prahlad, may you live a long time. One cannot appreciate or understand me without pleasing me. But one who has seen or pleased me has nothing more for which to lament for his own satisfaction." Then he said today's verse. So those try to please me in different mellows, because I am the only one who satisfies everyone's desire. So Krishna was alluring Prahlad, that, "All right, you have pleased me. I am one who satisfies everyone's desires. Whatever you want, you can have. So now you just ask me what you want, then I'll give you that." So Prahlad was born in a family of Asuras. That means normally the Asuras are very anxious for material benedictions, for material happiness. So in a sense, Nrsingadev is testing him. Krishna, when he gives his mercy to his devotees, he may offer a devotee, "You can have anything you want. If you want to have a heavenly planet, or you want to have a long life," different things he may offer. "You may want to have liberation, or to live on the planet with Lord Narayana." All these different things the Lord can offer one. And anything, whatever there is, one could get. So it's a big test. At that time, what will the person ask for? You see, just like Brahma, so there he can couldn't become a Brahma, but he could, thinking of Brahma when he left his body, he took birth on the planet of Brahma. So people have these different desires they develop. We have to be careful about what we desire. If we desire to please Krishna, if we desire to please the disciplic succession, Srila Prabhupada, then that desire is completely spiritual. We have other desires. Krishna may satisfy those desires, just like he satisfied the desire of Dhruva Maharaj, who wanted to be a great king. So he gave him a planet to be a king of, and he made him a king for 36,000 years on this planet. But that time, Dhruva Maharaj was in great separation from the Lord. He was when he actually saw Krishna, then he didn't want those things, but it was already too late. He'd already prayed. He'd already desired those different benedictions. So here, Prahlad is being offered, "What benediction do you want?" So in our heart, we actually have to purify our consciousness from other desires. Because if we don't, then at the, as we say, bottom line, yang yang vapi smarang bhavet tachadante kalivaram, when we leave the body or when it's time to make that decision, we'll choose whatever we've been thinking about. So it's not enough just to give lip service. "I want to have pure love for Krishna," but then all the time we're thinking about other things. We have to train our mind to actually think about serving Krishna. When other thoughts come, we have to relegate them to their appropriate position in our mind. That, "Oh, this is a secondary thing. My first priority is love for..." We have to train our mind continuously so that it's reflective, reflex. As soon as it comes to desiring something, we automatically desire love for Krishna. There may be intermediate things that come in there. Just like every day when we go on Sankirtan, of course we desire to offer something to Krishna, but that's also part of the offering to Krishna. We want to see that people get Krishna consciousness, that we can distribute more books. In the international BBT meetings that I came for, there was now BBT is being reorganized in North America and in the world, basically in those places where it's not already organized like that, that very strictly the cost of the total production cost of books will be doubled according to Prabhupada's formula. And the doubled part of it, 25% will be, or half of that will be used for printing more books. For expanding, the first 50 is just for reprinting the same book, and then for printing either new volumes, like the remaining Bhagavatams in English or in other languages, the books that have not yet been translated and published, or in other different languages. The more America has given the Spanish, Portuguese, and African languages to develop further books into. Then the other 25% goes for construction, the majority of which, of course, is for India. They're the Samadhis or the Mayapur Project. So in this way, of course, America has always been giving, but sometimes, in retrospect, different percentages were being given, where Prabhupada wanted a bigger percentage. Usually, Northern Europe has been giving the biggest percentage. We found that Southern Europe was only giving 7-6%, where they're supposed to be giving 12-15%. America had been giving 10 very regularly, 10 to 12. So now it's going to be a very steady remittance. So in this way, every time a book is purchased, that means that simultaneously there will be new books being published, as well as Prabhupada's projects in India being built. So that's a further impetus for purchasing more of Srila Prabhupada's books, distributing books. In any case, Prabhupada, his desire was that we should engage people in Krishna consciousness, whether they have different desires or not. But for the devotees who are engaged in the pure preaching, they should refine their own desires. It's up to us. No one else can say what we're thinking. Of course, we can get some idea from outside, seeing a person's activities over a period of time, what's their desire. But maybe somebody is real good at hiding what they're thinking. Only a most expert person would be able to figure it out. But Krishna, he knows our every thought. Just like there's a saying, don't fast underwater on a fast day. That don't, like the story that sometime on a fast day, devotee goes to the Ganges River, and although he's taking a nirjal ekadasi or nirjal fast where he doesn't take any water, but when he is going underwater, taking his sacred dip, goop, 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 he takes some water. So they're saying taking water underwater on the fast day. He's thinking, nobody is watching, so I can take water underwater. That is why devotional service is not easy. Why the Mayavadis, they say, oh, bhakti yoga is very easy. It's too easy. You have to do the more difficult way. Physically, bhakti yoga is not difficult in that sense. Although sometimes devotees take different austerities to preach, that's their glory. But it's not the type of simply unrelated austerities like the Mayavadi or yogis do, sitting in five fires. Devotees voluntarily accept so many austerities for preaching Krishna consciousness. That is their offering of austerity. Devotees purify their mind. They constantly wash their mind that it's not developing desires other than pure Krishna conscious desires. Where the yogi, they don't have that process. So actually for them, bhakti yoga is very difficult. So how do we purify the mind is we purify the desires. Whenever we see different desires and thoughts come up, which are every moment, then if something comes up which is not Krishna conscious, we reject it immediately. Drive it out, or we try to change it in our mind that no, this is not proper, and then we change it. So it's a constant endeavor, that's why we chant Gayatri mantras, we chant the Hare Krishna mantra to purify the mind. It makes it easier to change the way we think. Actually, we change the way that we desire. Instead of desiring sense gratification, we desire to do things in such a way that Krishna is pleased. Some natural desires will be there. So we learn how to dovetail those desires. So in this way they become purified. Just like you have desire to eat. We can't say, no, I won't eat. That's material. We say, no, I only eat prasadam. That's Krishna's mercy. In this way, it's like now we're having the Christmas, the Prabhupada marathon for offering to Srila Prabhupada very intensive service. So in this kind of rigorous preaching, we have to always be very careful to keep our consciousness fixed on what is the goal, what is the objective. If we're fixed that we're doing everything for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna, we're trying to satisfy Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada, the supreme succession, then the devotional service becomes nectar, it becomes very relishable. But when we are, it's like Prabhupada said, that sometimes the Guru gives a deity, installs a deity for the disciple, then the disciple is worshipping, and then after some time, the disciple thinks, oh, the Guru has given me so much a headache, we have to do the artis and get up in the morning, and we have to do so many things for the deities, it's too much. Then it becomes material. Prabhupada explained it's a burden of love. So we take our service as an opportunity to serve Krishna. It's not some external duty, just like somebody is working 9 to 5. It's something external, they want the money. But it's our personal service, it's our personal offering to Krishna. Whatever service we do, whether we offer an arti or our service of bathing the deities, or whether we offer our service in the fire of preaching, we may offer our thoughts, words and deeds in the fire of devotional service. In this way, we have to always see the mind, what it's thinking, what's coming up, and continually purify it. That we're doing everything for the service of Krishna. When we're in that consciousness, then you start to feel blissful. Then it's that flow of nectar gets interrupted or doesn't come as easily. That's why it's so dangerous when we start to get absorbed in offenses, or we start to get absorbed in material talk, gossip and things like that, because it distracts your mind from the constant desire of simply offering something to Krishna, and we start to get distracted. That's why Lord Chaitanya said, Gamma kotha na kohibe, gamma kotha na sunibe, bhalo na khaibe, bhalo na poribe. Don't talk materialistic, or don't engage in gossip or materialistic talk. Don't listen to it. Na sunibe, na kohibe. Don't speak it. Don't desire to have luxurious clothing. Don't desire to simply eat luxurious things. Simply engage in worshipping the Lord, Radha Krishna, in pure devotional service. With Krishna's mercy, deities offered nice prasadam. Sometimes we get very nice opulent prasadam. Sometimes we get simple prasadam. All these things the devotee just takes in stride and keeps fixing the mind of what is the actual goal. We know that. We've already experienced that this material world doesn't give us complete satisfaction. So then why should we harbor in our heart the idea that maybe there's some material arrangement that I can be happy in? A brahmana bhuvana loke punarvati narjuna. Whether you go up to the brahma loka, down to the material most insignificant position, there's no complete happiness in this material world. Dukkhalaya sasvata. But as long as we harbor that idea that somehow, by some arrangement, I can be happy in the material world, that when Maya gives us the opportunity, when we get some opportunity to enjoy, then we think, oh, maybe this is the chance. This is will make me happy. And then we can fall down. So this is the thing we have to beware of. We have to always watch our mind purify. This is what they say, pulling the weeds. Even some advanced devotee, due to committing offenses or due to being overly proud and not being careful of association, which he takes gradually, these little weeds and little poisons can enter into the consciousness. But if one is an expert gardener, you see, it's not a very difficult task. It's not some huge that you have to become some kind of great self-realized soul first. It automatically happens. One becomes self-realized. One becomes a great soul by serving the greatest. But that doesn't, it's not something externally that one can easily recognize. It's just who is a very humble, careful gardener of his own spiritual creeper, who's able to guard against the weeds and the mad elephants and things that come in, and who's able to very religiously water the creeper with chanting and hearing the 9 practices of devotional service. So we know that even on one practice we can go back to Godhead. So normally we practice so many practices, but during the marathon sometimes we only practice chanting and hearing, chanting our japa and listening to the japa, or we don't necessarily always have time for deity worship or other things like that. So then we have to learn how to depend even on one practice of devotional, or 2 practices. We do service during the day and we chant and hear in the, to purify our consciousness. We need to chant and hear always, because otherwise we may start to see our service as material if we don't purify the consciousness by chanting and hearing. So these are some of the aspects. Now they're going to, Nrisimhadeva is asking Prahlad, what do you want? What are you going to ask for? Of course, when Prahlad was given this opportunity, his reply is that, my dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because I was born in an atheistic family, I am naturally inclined to material enjoyment. Therefore, kindly do not tempt me with these illusions. I am very much afraid of material conditions, and I desire to be liberated from materialistic life. It is for this reason I have taken shelter of your lotus feet. O my worshipable Lord, because the seed of lusty desires, which is the root cause of material existence, is within the core of everyone's heart, you have sent me to this material world to exhibit the symptoms of a pure devotee. Otherwise, O my Lord, O Supreme Instructor of the entire world, you are so kind to your devotee that you could not induce him to do something unbeneficial for him. On the other hand, one who desires some material benefit in exchange for devotional service cannot be your pure devotee. Indeed, he is no better than a merchant who wants profit in exchange for service. Little Prahlad is such a great devotee. So he was offered this benediction, which included any kind of benediction, even materialistic benediction, but he rejected that. He said, in fact, don't tempt me, Krishna, because I'm born in an atheistic family. But actually, I don't want any of these things, because these materialistic desires, they're caused the seed of our attachment to the material world. So please don't tempt me with these illusions, because I'm very much afraid of material conditions. In other words, even though when we preach or when we do active service, sometimes we may feel, because of Krishna's own inspiration, we get some taste of bliss, but we shouldn't become fearless of material conditions. We become fearless in one sense, but we have to be fearless in the shelter of Krishna. In other words, not that suddenly we think, now, because I got a little bliss, I feel I got some results in my devotional service, or I feel some kind of enthusiasm somehow by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, that now I don't have to be very careful about the material condition. We always have to be careful when it comes to sensitive issues of sense gratification. We have to be careful, because Maya is such that when a devotee's heart is very soft, actually that makes it a right place to plant a seed of devotion. It also makes it a right place to plant a seed of material activity. So we have to be very careful to not allow material desires to creep in. We have to be very careful for that. Just as Prahlad said, I'm afraid of material conditions. We have to be fearful of material conditions. Therefore, we constantly do service. We constantly remain absorbed. So I hope that during this marathon, everyone can take advantage of the additional services and try to experiment with being completely absorbed in Krishna's service in a very intense way. And be careful. See that the mind doesn't take on material bends. If you find that the mind is somehow experiencing some material changes, then should reveal your mind to some devotees that actually you're experiencing some material doubts or something like that, because we don't want any casualties in the battle. If somebody sees any dangerous symptoms, then they should allow themselves to be preached to or to analyze that from a more objective view and try to get purified from any kind of doubts. So these are some of the points. We should follow in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, one of the Mahajanas, and pray to Krishna that he'll always give us his mercy to have pure devotional service. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sedaiti Gadadha Sivasari Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram, Ram. When I went back to Mayapur, we actually, in Atlanta, we had a very nice little Rath Yatra procession. We did like we do here, where we carry Prabhupada. Sometimes they carry Jagannath, Subhadra, Balaram, palanquins in the park. About a few hundred people came. It was a nice little procession, little festival. Then I went back to Mayapur for the full moon Ras Leela festival of Lord Krishna, the end of the Chatur Mas. And about 200,000 people came to Mayapur. When I went there, the devotees, they did a little 3-day marathon, because so many people were coming through that all the devotees from morning to night were distributing books. They distributed about roughly 20,000 pieces of literature, or Lakshmi points, in the 2-3 days. At that time, there were also a minister and some justice from the Supreme Court were there, some other respectable personalities. So I was preaching more to them than to the devotees, but they were very enlivened by understanding Krishna's pastimes from the Krishna conscious viewpoint. Because normally in India, even though everyone knows about Krishna and his Ras Leela, but they have some material idea about it. And when they understood the spiritual nature, how the gopis were giving everything to Krishna in a totally spiritual sense, then they became very inspired. So I came here for, especially we had international BBT, and then we're having on the 3rd and 4th North American GBC meetings in Dallas. So I came for representing New Talabon and New Orleans, Atlanta, Murray Sevak, the southeastern United States zone, in those meetings. Today, since I thought that Acharya Dev and Tamakrishna Goswami and the other members of the North American BBT contingent could handle everything, that I come and just take the opportunity of seeing the devotees, having come so far from India. Right after the meetings, basically, I'll be heading back, because there's a whole chain of preaching programs organized for December and January in India. On the way back, I'll be stopping in Tokyo. I just phoned up. I have disciples there, and just for a day or so. And then there's going to be a Rath Yatra in Malaysia on the 13th in Penang. Then on the 16th in Orissa, there's a festival in a place called Sambalpur in the western part of Orissa. And then there's a whole Sankirtan 3-month marathon they're doing, which started on December 1st and going till, or 2 months rather, 60 days, going until the end of January through 3 states in India. So I'll be participating in those festivals. And then there's a Rath Yatra in Madras on the 14th of January, and one in Bangalore on the 23rd. So a lot of preaching programs. And I'll be, after doing indeed the installation of Nitai and Gaur at Vasudev Dutta's place in Bangladesh near Pundarik Dam, then I'll be coming back here for the Mardi Gras festival in February. That's the basic itinerary now. Of course, anything can happen in this kind. So don't be surprised if... Are there any questions? Yes? Chanting and hearing and remembering keep the fever down. then we come back to the Dham and we see the deities, then that helps to purify our consciousness. Just seeing the beautiful form of Nitai Gaurachandra, Radha Radha Kanta, this helps to take away the images of passion and ignorance that come in the mind. That's why we do deity worship, is to help to purify, and why we, in kirtan, we enthusiastically chant and dance. When we're out road, we don't get to see the deities, so we develop sometimes some more attachment and separation for the deities. Sometimes when one's in the temple, they take the deities for granted, and sometimes they don't come to all the programs, or they don't think it's so important. But when you're out preaching and you have to face all the time association of passion and ignorance, then you really appreciate how great a fortune it is to be able to come and to have associate, to be able to worship the deities and take association from the Archavatar. In traveling around the world, people were surprised when I told them that actually I hate flying. Actually, flying is very uncomfortable for me. But to be able to go at the end and see the effulgent faces of the devotees, and especially to see also the different deities established by Prabhupada or on behalf of Prabhupada in ISKCON, that actually is very purifying. It's very enlivening. That's why it's important how we direct our thoughts. The neophyte is usually always like 1 foot in Maya and 1 foot in Krishna consciousness, and their mind is not real clear on thinking about service to Guru and Krishna. It gets a little bit splayed out with other considerations and attachments. Like false ego attachment. Attachments to the body and so on. Like feeling comfortable or just being absorbed kind of in the modes. But if we can cultivate this attachment to the deity, to the disciplic succession, to the Krishna conscious process, and actually that can help us. So when you're out preaching, you can be, if you feel separation, oh, it's so nice to be nice to have association with the deities. That's very purifying. We should cultivate feeling separation from Krishna, separation from the Guru, separation from the spiritual pastime. Then when we develop that greater taste, the greater appetite, it's just like Krishna left all the gopis during the Ras Lila. Because by having separation from Krishna, when he would come back in the future, they would have a greater appreciation. So if we, even when we're out preaching, if we're thinking of the holy vow, just like when one's, it's like when I travel and preach, I'm usually thinking about Mayapur. Actually, if I had the choice, if everyone was Krishna conscious in the world and I didn't have to, I would prefer to stay in Mayapur Dham. It's so transcendentally relishable. One immediately feels separation from Lord Chaitanya, even in the Dham. You immediately feel a connection. But Prabhupada instructed we have to go and preach and bring the message of Lord Chaitanya, the message of Mayapur Dham, to different parts of the world. So that the devotees feel that the holy Dham is their own place. So we don't belong to the material world, we belong to the spiritual world. Then while we're in the material world preaching, that we can feel some separation from the spiritual world. That's good. Right? If we start seeing that, oh, this mode of passion, this looks pretty enticing, this is pretty nice, these people are really enjoying, they're having a good time, what am I missing out in? Right? If we start thinking like that, we're in trouble. Fortunately, usually the mode of passion, ignorance, Krishna gives us intelligence to see that these people are actually suffering. They may think they're enjoying, but you can see that how their enjoyment is the other side of their suffering. It's like, it's just so gross that usually the devotees in the mode of goodness, they can see that these things are actually not real happiness. But if we start to get affected and start thinking, start analyzing, just like before we're put to hell, you're taken out of this body and you're put in a little training camp. Say if your next body is, say you have to take birth as a pig, so they'll take you to hell and they'll start forcing you to eat stool. But then until when finally you start to differentiate that, well, that stool was a little better than the other stool, then they put you in the pig body. So the point is that when you start to see that, when you categorically see that how the material world, it's maya, there's no enjoyment there, then you're safe. When you start to differentiate, well, maybe that stool is a little better than this stool. Maybe that material enjoyment is a little better than this one. You see, that's material. So we have to train our consciousness in seeing from the absolute point of view. Yes?
Well,
in a real state of emergency, the Shastra says that a person can bend certain rules, something like cheese. Maybe in a real emergency it could be bent, because basically it is vegetarian. But like in America, generally speaking, they have soft cheeses, cheese spreads, cottage cheese, so many different kinds of soft cheddar, which doesn't use, basically as far as I understand, doesn't use animal rennet. It's the hard cheeses that use it. So the hard cheese or soft cheese, I mean, if there is a soft cheese of some sort or another, then... And cheese is such a thing that in any case, it keeps for a long time. I know that in Marai Sevak, they go to a cheese factory. We have our cows, so usually there's places that make cheese in the rural area. And if you go to them, they'll make the cheese for you without the animal rennet. And you can buy the big clunks of it for about 15, it comes like 15-pound blocks of circular, I forget what you call them. There's a name for it. And it only costs about $1.80 or $2 per pound. Or if you buy it in the stores, it's a little more expensive. People could get a big chunk, and devotees can carry a little half a pound of cheese in their baggage or something. I think it's more important. Cheese is not... One should always take the best alternative. I mean, if there's nothing else and the person's, you know, ready to collapse out of fatigue, well, I wouldn't think that would be a sin, but we have to avoid the mentality of when there is an alternative, we always take one which is more risky, which is maybe more nebulous. Right now, there are a lot of companies that don't use the animal rennets. Someone can research it, but it's more important if we buy things like you buy cooked foods. It's that's more dangerous. But a lot of times the devotees buy cooked grains or something, pretzels, I don't know, different things. The milk products and fruit contains less karma or less, fruit doesn't contain any mentality from the person you buy it. When you buy cooked foods and not, again, processed, just like we might sometimes buy puffed rice, but normally we cook it in some kind of... So grains are a little bit more risky because, especially if it's grains that are cooked by a person, then... The mentality of the person cooking may go into the grain a little bit. So that's more dangerous. But in preaching, once, as I said, the Shastra does say you can bend the rules a little bit, but we have to be careful just to take whatever the best alternative at that particular time is, rather than just say, well, I have a preaching, I have a carte blanche, then I can do anything. We should always take the best. Try to be cautious, be afraid of the material energy. Otherwise, we get into that mentality that even when we're not doing so much preaching, maybe we will be protected because we're preaching. But then if we get into that idea that, well, I'm preaching so that I can do anything, then when we're not so fully absorbed in preaching, we'll do the same thing and then we'll be in trouble. So by always, Krishna provides something, and if there's nothing else, all right. But if we take the best, take the more cautious, always just take the more cautious alternative. Actually, when he was explaining how in traveling Sankirtan, they were mainly taking salads and nuts and things like that. Because in India, especially, you don't even buy breads, usually because when they cook the breads, they're cooked, usually the bakers are Mohammedans that cook. And when they cook the breads, they put animal fat they don't usually use animal fat in the bread, but they use it for greasing the pans. Sometimes they put it in the bread also, so usually, this what they call pavaroti or the cooked breads in India are very risky.
So that we do, unless we have it specially ordered or something by some known baker with some devotee there, we don't usually use any kind of breads in India. So Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj is explaining to Prabhupada how they're eating salads and fruits and nuts and things like that. And Prabhupada said, ah, yes, this is very good. You can simply eat Ekadasi always. He said, there is this one nut. What do you call that nut? It is like this, bent. Then someone said, oh, cashew. He said, yes, you can eat that. It is very good. Of course, Prabhu Vishnu Maharaj still eats grains now and then, but he has... He told me one time, Prabhupada encouraged it, yes, you can even eat Ekadasi. You can eat nuts and fruits and things. So, I personally find that it's very nice if, like when I go on these long journeys, I try to take some bread or take some things with me. And actually, if in Germany they used to have granola and cheeses and things like that, they'd have a special pack, which apparently would last the devotees. You know, they'd buy fruit and other things. It would last the devotees a week, 6 days. They come back on Sunday and have a Sunday feast. And that's how they did Sankirtan for years, with different kind of little like trekking prasad. And I know the devotees in San Diego, who used to go to Malaysia and do painting sales and things, they used to carry a little hot plate with them and have one of those Prabhupada cookers from Vrindavan. And they would, where it has like four stories. And the bottom story, you put your rice. And then above it, the sabjis and things come. Where you put the dal, was it the rice in the bottom. And then vegetables come in compartments above that. So as you cook your rice, the steam coming from the rice steams your vegetables. By the time the rice is finished, the vegetables are also cooked. So while you're chanting japa, the whole thing's just happening automatically. When the water is finished in the rice, you take it off, the vegetables are steamed. Then you take the top of the cooker has the handles on the plate. So then you turn it over and it becomes a little wok. And then on the hot plate, they put a little chance in there and then put the chance in the vegetables, because just steamed vegetables, you know, maybe like a little spice, spin it around. And then they take their rice and the vegetables, because they got tired of just, you know, eating out all the time and of fast food type thing. So I've seen different devotees have developed different techniques for survival. But we have to just try to be as responsible as possible. And the more that we can eat food that's cooked by devotees, or less we can eat, you know, things which are risky, the better. But, you know, within there's some gray areas, like sugars is put through bones, or some cheeses. I don't know, there's some thing used to curdle. I don't know. I understand it's like 1/1,000,000,000th of a part, but it's some minor part there. So if there is some kind of alternative, then just take the more safe alternative. But these are like borderline cases. I mean, Prabhupada one time said that in his Kali Yuga, everything is... They told him that sugar even, you know, was put through bones or something. And he said, well, you know, sugar is definitely vegetarian, but I mean, they spoil everything. So if we can try to avoid that, that's better. But and those things are a bit borderline, things we should just try to avoid. If it's life or death, or if it's something there's nothing else, then you're doing the rule without really trying to please Krishna. And not that we become whimsical at all, where there's a loophole in some, where we just take the loophole and then we just actually do it because we want to do it, not actually because it's for Krishna. We shouldn't look for the loopholes. We should try to do whatever's the best alternative at that time within the scope that we have. Yeah? Bhakti Ken? Because those things are made by machine. Lord Nityananda, he used to take puff rice, but normally we add a little ghee to it. That's one thing is that usually when we take this type of grain, you just take a little ghee and then just sprinkle it over it. So then that kind of like purifies it, added something, then we offer that. But if it's cooked by machines like that, so technically in a temple, they don't like to offer the puffies and things that, from outside. But the secret is that Lord Nityananda, he used to take puff rice. He used to take this type of puffed cereals, fried Rice Krispies, fried puffy chira, and things like that. So for Lord Nityananda, he can offer this type of cereals. But generally we don't like to just offer him something without just dry, so we add a little ghee to it. Some, you know, just a sprinkle a little bit. Or if there's a cooking arrangement, then you just add a chance to it. That's usually what we do. I know in India sometimes they also offer, I don't know if that's Nityananda, but they used to take this, but sometimes they take, they add mustard oil in Bengal because they're so attached to mustard oil. They take mustard oil and chilies. But I don't think in the West this taste has been developed. It's a bit passionate. They just take the cereal, mix a little, sprinkle a little mustard oil on it, and then take green chilies and eat it, hot chilies. But I don't know how bonafide that is. That's kind of a regional habit they have. But Nityananda used to take the cereals. We add a little ghee, it's offered. But one time Prabhupada said, just add a little ghee, it comes all right. One time we went to a feast and they cooked everything in oil. Prabhupada said, oh, just sprinkle some ghee over it. There's two aspects. One, of course, is the kind of gross results that who's Krishna empowering more for preaching, for collecting, or for whatever particular service. That certainly is recognized. It's like Hanuman. Is he lifting mountaintops? Certainly, it wasn't thought to be insignificant. He was doing a very big service for Ram, building the bridge going into Lanka. So, but the little spider was throwing the flecks of dust into the ocean, you know, doesn't get the same write-up. But there's also a consideration that Krishna considers a person's own personal capacity. You know, it's just like if two people, if we have put some weights here, you know, and different devotees try to lift weights, and depending on how big their muscles are, they may be able to lift different sizes of weight. So, but with practice, a person can gradually increase. So like that, certain person might have natural kind of level in a particular service. By Krishna's mercy, that can go unlimited. There's no limit to it. It's not that we have to think that I'm only limited by some characteristic, but it is unlimited. It can go unlimited. But in our third, Krishna is seeing that, well, how much energy a person is giving. And he's also recognizing that service, just as when Hanuman wanted to brush aside the spider and then Ram said no, he's also serving to his capacity. So Lord Chaitanya advises we should be humble. Chanadapi sunichena torodiva sahishana amanena manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Amanena, we shouldn't desire any faults or any kind of honor for ourselves. Actually, if we get some result, we always give credit in any case to Guru and Vaishnava, to Krishna. It's a competition who can please Krishna the most. Competition is actually to please Krishna. So, when another devotee sees that, oh, that devotee, what is transcendental competition? That devotee has done so nicely. So Krishna is more pleased by that devotee served. So that's very nice. The goal is to please Krishna. So may Krishna also bless me that I can do more service. In other words, the goal is that Krishna should be pleased. So everyone is trying to please Krishna. So on any particular day, one person may somehow appear to be more empowered for pleasing Krishna in a particular service. That doesn't mean that we also want to our capacity try to please Krishna to the maximum. And we are all very pleased that someone does more, because objective is that everyone should do more. There's no loss. So in that sense, we're not attached to the results in a material sense. We want to offer something more to Krishna. But since our only objective is to offer to Krishna, therefore we don't think that, well, I can't offer more to Krishna, therefore then I shouldn't offer anything to Krishna. That's material. Our objective is only to offer more and more to Krishna. To give more devotion. So someone else is doing more, we're also happy. Because it's for Krishna's service. So we have to keep our consciousness transcendental, then it's transcendental competition. It's like when they have these bicycle races and things, when they're going around the corners and nobody's looking, then they kick the other person's bike. It's not transcendental, it's mean, it's dirty sometimes. Recently in one of these football games, I just saw a newspaper front page or something, it had a headline, Purposeful Injury, where they just send out some big mobber who comes out and he just picks up some million-dollar quarterback or something and just picks him up and just smashes him on the ground and breaks bone or something. So then for the rest of the season, out. Then he gets kicked off the game and fined $10,000. But they ruin the opponent. Million-dollar, whatever they pay those people is so much. So it's like in a competition in the material world, it's dirty business.
Just like they found out recently that in Wall Street, there's people been cheating the government, cheating other people for hundreds of millions of dollars. So, of course, they got caught. So they had to spend time in jail and pay $100 million fine, pretty big fine. So that's the material, because not the transcendental. So transcendental competition, we feel happy if we see that someone else does, if we hear that someone has done a really good score, it makes us feel blissful. Oh, that's wonderful. But then it also inspires that, well, if that person can do, then Krishna can also empower me to do. It's just like before, people, they never thought that you could break a 4-minute mile. But now everybody breaks 4-minute miles. So when the first person did it, then there was a new goal. I remember that we used to do Harinam in Toronto, and we used to collect, and the whole temple would go out on Saturdays and do Harinam and collect. And we used to collect $400 a day, $450 Canadian a day for the whole temple. And that was the best collection in the whole North America on that particular time. There were about 20 temples in North America. So, you know, but then somebody developed new ways of book distribution and things like that, and gradually, so new heights were achieved. So we don't know what capacity a person has to do a particular kind of service, except under very intense situations. Then we can see what are the limits. Then that can help us to assign new goals in our mind. That helps to build our own faith that, oh, I can do more than I'm doing now. If other persons can do, then I can also do. Usually, in our mind, we relegate ourselves to a particular level of service. Then if somebody does more, we say, oh, how that person is doing more, he must be cheating. That attitude shouldn't be there. Is that all right? Everyone is all right? Hare Krishna.